You're not sick, Amelia, no.
No?
No, you're a little farsighted.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy the show.
He's like, you know, the typical fans, like a guy who's just drunk all the time and this and that. He's like, so are you a typical fan? He pauses and he's like, well, yeah, I do drink a lot. He popped some Benadryl right before he went on the show. He's getting all loopy.
It really kind of changed and influenced my life, which is so weird to come out of like a 52-minute documentary about a guy that shits on stage and throws it at people. Fuck Geraldo.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Grindhouse Messiah. Thanks for sticking with us. We've been here. This is our third or fourth episode since we returned after our long summer break. And this was actually an episode that I was planning to record before the summer break. And now we get to finally record it. But before I introduce our guest, Blaine, tell our folks what you've been up to.
Man, I'm dying of allergies. It's supposed to be the end of summer. It's hot as shit, and I keep getting sick again. So that's what I'm doing right now. And, as everybody knows, you and I mainly talk about weather.
True.
So I literally just listened to like 6 minutes of us talking about the weather. So I don't need any more of that. But yeah, that's basically
what a sound check there is, man.
Yeah. It was cool enough for my allergies to come back, and now it's just back to being 94 degrees, and I'm sneezing. So yeah, fuck it. Fuck Atlanta weather. It's ridiculous.
What's crazy is I live 14 hours north of you, and it's also 94 fucking degrees.
Yeah, but, I want everybody to know that every day you and I usually have a chat, and it's usually us just comparing the weather and it usually being basically the same. A little colder in the winter for you, a little hotter in the summer for me. Literally every conversation we have.
This is true. Hey, so we have a guest who's actually from Indiana. What's the weather like in Indiana? No, I'm just kidding. Tell everybody.
No, seriously. I want to know about this weather in Indiana.
Oh, okay. Let's start with the weather, and then you can actually tell us who you really are.
It was really hard not to chime in on that because I'm allergic to grass and tree pollen. So
the struggle
is real. I know how it goes. And probably the worst allergy attack I've ever had is in Atlanta, actually.
Yeah, no. It'll beat you up.
Yeah, for sure. But hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
No, thank you for coming on, man. We're happy to have you.
Awesome. So, Jason, tell folks a little bit about who you are and what you are up to.
Yeah, so I'm an independent filmmaker, like you said, based out of Indiana. And our recent film, Straight Edge Kegger, has been making the film festival rounds and doing pretty well. And we're about to embark on a tour of sorts to try to make back some of this debt that I've accumulated making the movie. But we're a really small group. It's always a skeleton crew. Most of the folks that work on these movies are friends and family. We do hire some outside folks, but for the most part, that's how we do things. It's all DIY and sort of punk rock mentality. That's our ethos.
Which makes a lot of sense, seeing that it's a punk rock movie. You know, before we dive into our movies, and I know we're going to come back to spend a little bit of time on Straight Edge Kegger at the end too, but before we dive into our movies that we selected to talk about today, can you give a real brief explanation, like a real brief, what is Straight Edge Kegger about?
Yeah, so it's about a gang of militant straight edgers, and one of the group's founding members, Brad, played by Corey Kayes, he breaks edge. He decides that the life's no longer for him, and the gang of edgers, they kind of only know how to react with violence, and one of those violent attacks turns deadly, and when it turns deadly, then it's like the people inside the house party, and the people outside, which are the straight edgers, kind of have to dig in their boot heels and fight it out to the death. So it's like a home invasion flick mixed with a punk house show.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good description. And, you know, I got a chance to watch it for the site, and there's a good interview up with you where we talked a little bit about kind of your history in punk rock and stuff. And if I remember correctly, you were never you never called yourself a straight edge, right?
No, other people definitely would have called me that, but I at the time, I probably didn't even know what it was. I think, you know, it wasn't too long before I did start drinking, which I still don't do drugs or smoke or anything like that. So I align with a lot of the straight edge mentality more than non, but it was actually just towards the end of me not doing anything, not drinking at all, that I finally discovered what straight edge even was.
That's funny. I was an edge kid for, time I was like 14-ish until I probably stopped calling myself edge at 19, but I didn't drink till I was almost 22. I definitely knew some of the hardline kids, not as hardline as this movie. I definitely knew some militant straight edgers in my time. Blaine, you were never a straight edge.
No. I was literally huffing VCR cleaner with my friends, listening to Minor Threat. Does that count? No. I realized at a young age that, like, drugs were pretty fun, and they all kept talking about not having sex, and I didn't get that because all I was doing was trying to have sex. I mean, I wasn't having sex, but a lot of the...
But you were straight trying.
I was trying, man. I was making a concerted effort, like... Wear a deodorant.
I'll be honest, I've never known a straight edge kid who was abstinent by choice.
Yeah,
as for sex, they were abstinent about everything else.
And you
the
guys,
sex thing, not so much.
And you guys tell me this: was yours like kind of intertwined in like the Christian hardcore scene as well? Like we had a weird bleed over. At the time, because I mean, like I was in the punk rock in like the mid '90s, so that was also like. Prime Tooth and Nail days, but like there was a huge bleed over.
I definitely had some of that, but like for instance, one of my favorite hardcore bands
of that
era.
Youth Cure straight edge. Like your mom just doesn't let you do that, so you don't do it.
I specifically was really into the band NIV, who identified as straight edge and also were like, you know, hardcore Christian dudes like
with Cookie Monster vocals, right?
Yeah, they're Cookie Monster vocals. Yeah, they had that death growl kind of vocal for sure. I still like them quite a bit, actually. I'll throw them on every once in a while, but I must say their staunch straight edge beliefs are a little bit much for me today. But that said, there's a lot of in the edge movement. There's a lot of religion in general. A lot of it though it comes out of the Buddhist side of things. There's a lot of that. Like with, I mean, like I was really into bands like Shelter, you know, who they're Hare Krishna and they're straight edge, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. So like, I'm not going to pretend to be like a straight edge expert because I know if an edge kid is listening right now, they're telling me, well, Shelter might've broken edge at this. I don't know, but, but I will say like, I liked a lot of that music a lot back then, and like I said, I called myself Edge until I was about 19 and lived it till I was almost 22, so, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Jason, I know we got to move on to the actual movies we're talking about, but I had to ask you something. While watching Straight Edge Kager, if a certain VHS tape ever made its rounds with you and your buddies, because I'm assuming you're somewhere around our age. I mean, we're both in our late 30s. You might be a little younger, but...
Yeah, I'm 31.
You're 31. Okay. Did a movie called The Edge of Quarrel ever make it there?
No. So it didn't. And I found out. So I started telling a straight edge guy down in Indianapolis about this idea for Straight Edge Kegger, and he brought up to me The Edge of Quarrel. And funny enough, because, you know, coral and coral sound very similar.
Very similar. We would always call it the edge of coral.
I spent so much time trying to figure out why I couldn't find this movie, and it's because I was looking it up incorrectly, and it made a lot more sense once I realized what it was. but no, I had never heard of it, and so that's a good thing, because I think that they wind up being very different movies.
But I did
get really paranoid as soon as I found out about it, and I reached out to the director.
David Larson?
Yeah, there you go. And he was the sweetest guy about it.
Yes.
But I bought Edge of Coral and I bought some posters. And I actually, we had planned on him actually having a cameo in the movie, but then it wasn't in the cards, like money wise. We live so far away from each other. But so you'll I don't even know, you would have to really, really look, but there's actually an 11x17 of Edge of Coral hanging in the background in Straight Edge Kegger.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
I didn't see it. Yeah, no, that was definitely a fan favorite with me and my buddies. I think we picked it up at a Murder City Devils show.
That would make sense.
Yeah, when they were touring in Name and Blood, I think that's about the time that came out. And, yeah, we picked it up, and it is hilarious.
First and foremost, I'm pissed I've never heard of this movie, and now I need to see it.
I have two versions.
Still available. It's still available on DVD through DVD Netflix, if I were to sign back up for that, you know.
Oh, so
I
really?
Watch it that way.
I have a 2 hour and 25 minute cut on VHS, and then I have the 2 hour cut.
Are they both on VHS?
They're both on VHS.
That doesn't help me because I don't have a VCR.
You gotta get one, man.
How else are you gonna watch a nearly 3 hour version of Edge of Coral?
I don't know, but I will say that I noticed here that it stars Rocky Vadelato, and I actually really like that dude's music. But I know him as a singer songwriter from like maybe a good 5 or 6 years after that. I knew he was in punk stuff before that, so I didn't realize. Very interesting. I'm all geared up to check this movie out. I'm probably gonna be like, oh man, I shouldn't have done that, right? Oh, is that what's gonna happen?
It makes God Money look like Citizen Kane.
Oh, all right. I don't want to get into God Money, dude. But God Money is the movie with the best soundtrack I've ever heard, and it's the worst movie I've ever seen.
Right. It's not the worst. I'm watching through all the Master P movies right now.
I haven't watched it in a long time.
Oh, man. I was not young enough when I saw that, I feel like. I listened to the soundtrack from the time the movie came out, and I loved it. And then I was probably had aged out of being thinking it was the movie would have been cool by the time I saw the actual movie, and I was like, oh, this is bad. In fact, back to the point of Netflix, I'm pretty sure the first time I saw God Money is when I got Netflix on DVD years ago. So there you go.
Oh, man.
That was definitely a family movies. Video rental for me.
Yeah. God Money was big. Yeah. I have good memories. I will never revisit it because it's so pure in my brain.
Yeah, don't.
I do know that guy
made some cool-ass music videos, but he did not direct a good full-length movie.
He made one of my favorite movies of 2014, though.
Darren Doan made a movie in 2014?
Fuck yeah, he made Saving Christmas, starring Kirk Cameron.
Oh, shit, I didn't realize he was involved with that.
Co-written by Kirk Cameron, where he stops the movie to be Kirk Cameron. It's hilarious.
Ooh, I didn't realize he went that direction. So I'm going to...
Okay, let's go.
Moving
okay.
along. Let's keep
oh, sorry,
moving along.
We're falling into that hole where it's like, oh, but did you see...
we're falling into the Kirk Cameron hole,
I really don't want to be in that hole.
Yeah, no. So the first movie that we decided, that Jason picked for us, because we kind of decided we're going to do punk movies, and he threw a few at me, and we chose a couple. And the first one is 1988's Hellbent. Blaine, tell us what IMDb says about Hellbent.
Oh, man. A band leader whose career is nosediving makes a deal with the owner of a bar to sell his soul for success. He does not own the bar in that film. Okay.
No, he doesn't. No.
That's always not true. Wrong. Yeah, it's not correct, but yeah, that's the description. Actual description is like a shitty band gets approached by Tannis. You just switch around the letters and you know the movie, basically. And it gets like a Faustian sort of deal. To get all the fame and fortune of playing in front of crowds of sixes to sevens of people.
Yeah. Yes, that sounds exactly right.
Yeah, they really do. And I take a little bit of umbrage with the fact that the band leader's name is Lemmy, because I love Lemmy, and this guy is no Lemmy.
But it's a neat little nod. You know what I mean? Like, at least they didn't name him after, like, Bono.
Although, I
that would have been the movie I want. This is the movie that I want.
So before we get into what we all thought of it and what you know your experience with this movie, Jason, and what you know why you thought it'd be a good one to cover, I want to first state that my impression of the movie was that it's basically Faust as directed by Alex Cox.
We gotta go back a second.
Oh, what'd I miss?
I didn't choose Hellbent.
Yeah. I've been thinking this whole time. I was like, I thought I picked this.
Oh,
piece of shit.
Yeah, Blaine this is like, Hellbent.
Yeah.
So this Hellbent is like, was new. Yeah, Hellbent was new to me as well.
All right. I didn't want to be like too corrective here, but I was like, man, this is like a Blaine pick because this is
you're
very
right.
Much,
so you chose Hated. Blaine chose Hellbent. Oh, great. So yes. Blaine. You tell us a little bit about your history with this film.
Oh, my history with this film is just like every other story I tell. Rented this from a gas station around 2000 or so. It's the sanitary food liner, a BP that sold basically 40 ounces and rented videotapes. It was a great mecca that I wish I still could go to in Cleveland, Tennessee. I can't talk. I'm on a lot of allergy medicine. But this movie, me and my brother found it. We had so much fun watching it. It is insane. The sets are ridiculous. It's basically like they made like their own like kind of shitty haunted house corridors that everything is made within. The shows are ridiculous. I love like this concept, especially you see in like a lot of 80s films, a lot of trauma stuff where like punk rockers are like these savages who do nothing but like vomit on each other and punch each other in the stomach and like just a bunch of just insane people. And this film like totally fulfills that sort of fun stereotype. It's ridiculous. The music is it's not worse than I think a lot of the later Alex Cox movies. I mean, it's not Repo Man, but it's better than Walker.
It starts with Angry Samoans, so I was pretty cool with that.
Yeah. And I mean, like, to me, it's like one of those movies like, yeah, it's not like a good movie, but it's a lot of fun. And I think that you're not as much laughing at it, like, oh, this is such a piece of shit. It's enjoyable. You have fun. It's ridiculous. It's not taking itself seriously. So to me, I just think this is a fun movie. There's so many overly covered punk rock films, and I think this is one that kind of gets lost in the mix, just because people are always talking about Suburbia, which I don't understand because that one is just really long to me. Another State of Mind, which is just really long to me. But Hellbent to me is like this hour and 20 minute long movie that's a lot of fun. It's stupid. I love that he calls himself Tannis because it's just like it's just Satan. It's like it's so like if someone was like, gotta sign away your soul, my name is Tannis, I'd be like Satan or Santa. Which let's not forget that this is kind of a Christmas movie. It's an LA Christmas movie, like a la Tangerine, but it's a lot different. There's drive-by shootings.
How Christmas doesn't look anything like Christmas, like that.
But the movie has to remind you a lot that it's Christmas too.
Yeah, it like does. if you didn't see the like Santa display that gets repositioned as Satan, by the way, after the drive-by shooting. Yeah, if you didn't have that, then I would have no idea it was a Christmas movie.
Right. And one of the things that I love about this movie is how it introduces characters, because like we have no idea. We just met two characters that we don't know really who they are, why we're following them. They're just like in a band, but you can't figure out the dynamic between who's the stars. Is it the guy? Is it the girl? And then you go straight to a drive-by shooting where like a middle-aged man is gunned down next to a Santa. You get the Satan thing. You're like, okay, like, where is this going?
I don't know what you're trying to point out, because to me, that's just what Christmas means to me.
You don't know if anyone has names until like 15 minutes. I don't want to exaggerate. I don't want to say 30, but I would say 10 to 15 minutes before you hear anyone's name.
That's fair. I think you're right. I think it's about that. Yeah.
Or who they're supposed to be. But I love it. Our protagonist doesn't do anything. He mopes. And then acts really, really drunk on like Sudafed, I guess. Like it's fun. Well, what did you think? Since I think this is a first timer for both of you guys. What was kind of you being a gentleman who has made a punk rock film? Were you just like, damn it, why didn't I make Hellbent?
No, that was definitely not the reaction. But I will say that I watched this movie twice, and it's actually kind of lengthy. And I watched this movie twice. Like, I mean, it's a long hour 20 or whatever.
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
But I watched it twice and took notes the second time, and I actually enjoyed it more the second time. I thought it was a pretty rad movie. I totally feel for these guys because I can tell they wanted to do so much more, but they must have just been limited, which I think kind of is why a lot of the scenes are really segmented. And you have like you said, there's like six or seven people at that punk show.
Right.
And then they go back to that practice space way too many times. And he, you know, Lemmy keeps shooting the ceiling. I don't know why, but it's like it seemed like they kind of were very limited to what they could do and tried to milk it for all it was worth. So I really appreciated it for that. And my favorite thing about the whole movie is that almost all of it shot on handheld.
Yes. I mean, like which is rare at that point.
Yeah, for 1988, like, that's a pretty radical idea. So I appreciated that.
Yeah, Justin, what about you, man?
So I liked it, but I thought I was gonna love it, so I ended up being a little disappointed. Not because it wasn't
fun,
but because it wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. See, like, so here's the thing, right? It's clearly a far better film than the only other Richard Casey movie I've seen, which is Horror House on Highway 5.
Oh, you don't like Horror House?
Oh, yeah.
No. Let me finish.
All right,
like it quite a bit, but it's hot garbage. It is a horrible movie, but it's fucking fun as shit.
It's got Nazis, it's got slashers,
and the slasher wears a Dick Nixon mask. So
yeah, nice. Like there's a lot of cool stuff about that movie.
Oh, no, I agree. So my review of that when I reviewed it, the Vinegar Syndrome release some years ago, was essentially, this is hot garbage, but it's really a lot of fun. So this movie was far less garbagey, but I didn't have as much fun. So I don't know. I like the movie a decent amount, but I think my expectations were high, and so that's my fault more than the movie's fault. But I was a little disappointed. That said, I do like that Alex Cox type aesthetic, and that's what I was saying before. That it feels like if Alex Cox were to direct the Faust movie, that's more or less what this is.
I mean,
it's not. You know, I was trying to think to myself when I was BSing with Blaine about this movie another day, and I was saying, you know, hey, it's one of, you know, maybe it's one of lesser films by Alex Cox. And then he starts rattling off Alex Cox movies, and I realize there's really only a couple of his movies I like a lot. So it's not as if Alex Cox is a fucking genius all the way through. He's just a genius because Repo Man is that good. But, in general, a lot of his movies are not very good. So whereas, like, I like some of them more than Blaine does, because like, we were talking about Straight to Hell. I like Straight to Hell quite a bit. Blaine doesn't.
I like Straight to Hell.
But yeah. I realized after we'd had this discussion that, like, the Straight to Hell script is pretty shitty. I just really like the characters. And this movie, I think, shares a little bit of that, is that I feel like this film was made when it still needed, like, maybe one or two more passes at the script. Like, it wasn't done. Like, it just wasn't ready to be made yet. That's what it feels like to me, is that, like, with one or two more rewrites, this would have probably been really fucking amazing, and instead it's just good. And so that's kind of where I am on this movie.
That's fair, I guess.
But I think
you built it up too much, man. You gotta... Mm.
I definitely did.
I went into it. You know what? At this point in my life, I think because I've seen so much, when I find out that there's a movie from the 80s I haven't seen, I assume there's probably a reason. So I think I went into it.
Really
I went into it kind of low, yeah, like low expectations, and I think that's why I dug it. It's not, you know, it's not one of my favorites now or something, but I liked it.
Yeah.
No, you know, that's a good way to look at it. I think I need to start lowering my expectations.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's a great way to say it. Like, when something you have, like, when something comes across, like, like I was digging through like a used DVD place the other day, and like I'm picking up shit I've never heard of. Like, I know this is not going to be like, it's not going to, I mean, it wasn't like somewhere, you know, the other 2001 A Space Odyssey was just sitting there, and yeah. It's called Love Beat the Hell Out of Me, which is actually something I picked up. Noted as the black man's answer to Waiting to Exhale, which I was like, all right, I'm buying that. But you know what I mean? Like, you know, like the expectation is like, okay, let's hope that this is interesting and weird.
Yeah,
and judge it from there. Like, was this
It's definitely interesting and weird. I'll say that it definitely is.
Which is being part of the great thing about Vinegar Syndrome. Like, I mean, it's a whole company built on not exactly great films, but yeah. You know that it's going to be something that's interesting and most likely weird and hopefully porno.
That's, you know what, that's funny about expectations, because if I found this movie and had no idea what it was, like on the rack at some crappy little store, and I just picked up that VHS and watched it, and I had never heard of it and no one recommended it, I'd probably think it was like the best discovery ever.
Yeah,
like, because it was like referred to me, I guess I wasn't as blown away.
Yeah, see, because like me and my brother just found it at a gas station to rent.
Yeah, so I could see loving it more if that was my experience. That's how I was with Gummo when I first watched that.
Oh, man, yeah.
Oh, you could get Blaine going on Gummo for a whole other episode.
Yeah,
so
that's one of my top five of all time. I got
that on VHS at a gas station.
Yeah, and that's where you should get it from. It's yeah. That kind of movie.
Yeah, for sure.
I think our kids are missing out, man. They don't get to find shit at gas stations on VHS anymore, you know?
I know. Even just the rental stores are all going away. Our local Family Video is closing, and it makes me sad.
Yeah,
I do love some of these streaming services that has weird, like shitty stuff on them. Like too though. Like I've been, I feel like I've been plugging Midnight Movie Society for like a month now, but like that's. There's so much weird fucking like VOD and super underground weird shit on it that it's like, wow, this is, I said VOD, but I meant SOV. I meant like shot on video stuff. It's so fucking bizarre. The stuff that they have on there, they have some cool like stuff you've heard of too. But they have a lot of stuff you haven't. And like, and so I feel like that's the market now that's kind of taking over some of the, you know, the old VHS at the back of the gas station kind of thing. So,
well, I mean, Amazon Prime is.
Amazon Prime is filled with crap like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Every Friday night, I spend like probably 90 to 120 minutes just digging just in Amazon Prime, just trying to find.
And not being able to pick what to watch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You still wind up putting on, you know, Sleepaway Camp 2 instead of something new.
I just watched reruns of The League again. I watched The League over and over.
Okay. Aren't you so fancy with your.
I don't know if anybody could ever call The League fancy. But yeah.
Fancier than Sleepaway Camp 2.
I guess.
All right.
We're spiraling. Blade.
Bring it back into help.
We have another movie, and this is the one that actually was chosen by Jason. This is 1990. Let's see if I can remember the date. 1993's Hated. Tell us about Hated, Blaine.
Oh, it's a long one. Documentary about notorious punk rocker performer Gigi Allen.
Yeah, well, that is actually probably the most accurate IMDb description we've ever read.
No. Three from Hell was noted sequel to.
Oh, yeah, sequel to Devil's Rejects.
Yes, that's the best one we've ever had.
Oh, that was so good. So, Jason, you did actually pick this one. What made you want to pick this? What's your history with this one?
So I mean, this movie in a lot of ways really kind of changed and influenced my life, which is so weird to come out of like a 52-minute documentary about a guy that shits on stage and throws it at people. But it did. It's like a really important movie to me in a lot of different ways. And the fact that Todd Phillips' new movie is Joker, and I'm pretty excited about that. So I thought, you know what? Maybe this is a good time to bring back in his very first flick.
No, it's perfect timing for that. Yeah, because this is, I think I've said a few times, this movie, when I first saw it, you know, probably, I think I got it off, you know, like Netflix when they had discs and stuff. I remember being like, man, the star of this movie is Todd Phillips, because
yeah,
you can see that he's Todd Phillips, like, pretty much out the gate. Like, I mean, that is tight documentary. He injects himself enough that you know who he is. Everything about it to me is like, he didn't go over. It's 52 minutes. It's enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't matter if you like Gigi Allen or you don't. You are compelled to watch. And he is, man, he's one of those guys. I don't have any complaints about Todd Phillips. He can make a fucking movie.
Mm-hmm. And I am going to be proof positive of a statement you just made, Blaine. I like this movie quite a bit. I fucking hate Gigi Allen. So to put it in perspective, you don't have to give a shit about this dude. And truthfully, fucking hate might be a little bit strong, because it's more like I'm over him, and I was over him long before I ever saw this movie, long before I knew this movie existed. I grew up in the punk rock scene. You hear about the legend of Gigi Allen, then you finally see or read something about Gigi Allen, and it's like, oh, he was kind of this one-trick pony. I'm just going to keep doing vile shit. But I will say, somehow Todd Phillips made him more interesting. And again, like you said, Blaine, it's not because he's the star here. It's because Todd Phillips made a great movie about a guy that is kind of just one of the worst humans to ever live. So he's really not that bad, because he didn't, like, he's not like a mass murderer.
Yeah, he surprisingly didn't kill anybody.
Yeah, I mean, but like, he did go to jail for just whipping out his junk in front of a little girl because it was funny.
No, that was the drummer.
Yeah.
No. He did that too. Now I'm confused.
No. So the naked drummer did go to jail for that. I don't think Gigi did, but I wouldn't put it past him. And he did beat women.
Yeah, he did beat women. But he also, no, he went to jail for something about exposing. You're right, though. The little girl one was the drummer.
Well, yeah, that was the naked drummer.
Ultimately, they're all a bunch of assholes. So, you know.
Like that guy, man. He has a psychic connection to the Lunatics. Is that guy alive?
Lunatics.
Yeah, I love that. Like, and just that picture of him just holding his heart on and a 12-inch Lunatics record. Just, like, so happy.
There are a lot of feelings that I've gotten from the Lunatics. Being aroused was never one of them, to be completely honest. I've never found those ladies all that attractive, but I am a big fan of some of their music.
In Terra Firma, when they do those quick cuts with the Lunatics, is that Romeo and Juliet? I don't know. They're
all right. I think that is Romeo and Juliet. I'm pretty sure I think it is, because I have that soundtrack on vinyl, and I'm pretty sure that that's the one that they have that song on.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, I remember them being, like, pretty attractive in those interstitials. I mean...
Okay, that's fair.
Devil's advocate.
I listened to a decent amount of Lunatics at one point in my life. I mean,
gross.
I can't say they're one of my favorite bands now, but
I used to be obsessed with them. Yeah, now I never listen to them. Every once in a while, I'll listen to, like, Binge and Purge or something. That's about it.
It was in that, like, real, real heavy, like, where I listened to everything that, like, Fat Records and Epitaph put out.
Yep.
Always. Yeah, yeah. And so, like, you know, yeah, it was like, oh, man, Fat Mike thinks this band is cool, so they're awesome. And, like, years later, I realized, like, not everything Fat Mike thinks is cool is awesome. But that's okay.
Yeah, they're aging like ice cream. I'm looking at them now.
Oh, like they're melting? Like they're actually melting?
My big hang-up was I fell in love with Bikini Kill.
Yes.
And when I fell in love with Bikini Kill, I just kind of went, okay, so all female-led punk rock is the best. And so I just, like, dove in head first and then slowly weeded out the stuff that I actually didn't like that much.
No, that's...
Which is everything but Bikini Kill?
Yeah, kind of.
Man, I just insulted all female-led bands. That's not true.
No, it's really not true. But
Bikini Kill is kind of the best one. So
they are
the
best. But Bikini Kill beats all the guys too. So
that's fair. That's totally fair. But before I was going to say, one of the things I found really weird as I watched this movie is I kept thinking to myself that Gigi and his brother, if you added their mustaches together, had a full mustache.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That is true. Do you know what people call Merle Allen?
No, what do they call him?
They call him Depeche Merle because they think he's really emotional, and he admitted to liking Depeche Mode, and so he started being made fun of and called Depeche Merle, and he fucking hates it, I guess.
Oh, man, that's so good. The fact that, like, liking Depeche Mode is an insult in their circle just yeah. shows, like, how, like, they have to be so edgy and cool. They have to be. Yep. And even Depeche Mode, who's not really, like, some super pussy band in my mind, you know, that, yeah. oh, that's
not the
so
toughest
horrible.
Either, though.
No, they're truly not tough. Yeah. Dude. I'm not going there. I wasn't like... going there. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, with our ages, like, we were kind of, like, the generation kind of right before, like, all the people who did legitimately, like, listen to G.G. Allin and see G.G. Allin. Do you guys remember those assholes? Like, that's one of those things I always remember that always made me not like G.G. Allin. Because I remember, like, I remember you guys remember that band Today Is the Day. Like, I think they went on, like, a few of those guys, like, Mastodon or whatever. But I remember them always, like, talking about G.G. Allin. And I finally listened to a G.G. Allin record, and I was like, oh, man, this is what you guys are going on and on about? Like, well, it's going to blow your fucking mind when you hear a Jawbreaker record. Like,
like, well, the thing about G.G., though, I think, is you can hit one record, and it's totally different than another record.
That's true.
And so, yeah, so, like, if you listen to the early stuff, he does not sound like the later stuff where he's like, suck my ass, it smells, and I'm infected with AIDS and all that stuff. If you listen to his stuff, the first record that he released, it probably upset him in his later life to listen to those records, but they're really catchy songs, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like the Queers have a shirt, and like they always put out this thing that says, like, I knew G.G. What is it? Like, I knew G.G. before he was... Oh, get up, I'm sorry. But basically, it's like this photo of him looking more like a glam punk than
nice.
Like this crusty, gross dude. Yeah. So he used to sound totally different. So, but you're right. I mean, if you just put on like Suck My Ass, It Smells, it's like, what the hell is everybody talking about?
Right. Yeah.
Well, and you know, you think about it, like, I think it's funny they bragged for all these years that he was going to murder himself or, you know, commit suicide on stage, and then he dies of an accidental drug overdose, and I'm just like...
That bothered him. I'm sure, dude, I'm sure that made him the most insecure. Like, when in the documentary, when somebody's, like, accusing him of that, and he's freaking out about the newspaper in Boston, uh-huh. I'm just like, he just must have been so, like... embarrassed, I guess, and he's just like
do you think he's like he's looking at us, you know, from hell right now going, I'm still ashamed of that, you know?
Yeah, like, oh yeah, I'm sure
he died in like the most shame for him, you know? Like, I had to do was just cut a little deeper 2 weeks earlier when I was on stage.
It's because it's like that was like, you know, he could do all this crazy stuff on stage and make all these promises, but it's like the one extreme that he just wouldn't do, which right. it's actually kind of fucked up that people were like egging him on.
That is, yo, it's really fucked up that people were egging him on. Like the scene in the movie where there's someone yelling at him saying he's too much of a pussy to do it, and he's yelling yeah. back at them. I'm just like, really? Like his fans might be more fucked up than him.
Yeah, oh my God. Some of that, when they show that guy who they're kind of talking about how some of his fans are just like these weird, lonely people, and they show that shot of the guy who's kind of standing off to the side and like rocking back and forth. That guy haunts my dreams, man.
Yeah. That guy definitely committed several murders.
He had to have. Had to have.
I love meeting the fans in that thing, because you can kind of see that a lot of people are there for the train wreck, and like I have to admit, like, I'd be the guy going, hey, you're not gonna kill yourself, you know, pussy, and like, I mean, I get that. I would egg someone on. Someone's gonna tell me they're gonna kill themselves,
you're such a bad person, dude.
I would
you're
be like,
such a bad
show
person.
Me don't talk about it, be about it, and because you know someone's not gonna kill themselves. God, man, that is
well,
such a
you
better
think you know that.
You think you know, like, because I'm one of those guys, I'd be like, yeah, what are you going to do, kill yourself? You know, especially, like,
what do you think about the
21-year-old me. Like, I mean, I kind of wish those guys in the anti-scene would still kill themselves. I'm having a. I'm sorry. I'm having a fun episode. I'm sorry.
I think that
that's age, okay, Blaine. It's okay.
I think the age definitely plays a factor because I definitely got into this documentary and into Gigi at a time in my life where I was more. I try to shock people with my humor. I thought like two girls, one cup was a really funny thing to show people at parties. And now
hey, you know what you need to do, Jason. Though
is gone.
Make sure you scrub your Twitter feed for when you get hired by Disney, because otherwise somebody will point it out and you'll get fired two movies into a three movie contract.
That's true. Yeah. But I'm like totally not like nowadays. It's like I'm the opposite. I don't know. Like it's just all the. Not all the recklessness is gone, but definitely that part of me that was like the shock rock part of me is gone.
Right. So how about the fact that his legal name was Jesus Christ Allen, and that his parents named him that because his father said he was visited in a vision saying that they needed to name him that because he was going to be a great man that was almost Messiah-like.
Yeah, well, his father also would shoot a gun at them in the front yard while they played.
Yeah, so his father might have been part of the problem.
Yeah, because to me, like, when they're talking up this, like, legend of their father, I'm like, that sounds real sad. They grew up. It sounds like he probably, since his brain went all wacky, his schizophrenia probably kicked in, and his brother exploited it to go on these tours. That's what I kind of get from it. Like, not to be unfun, was like, oh, your dad was schizophrenic? Oh, then I just assume, like, oh, he went wacky about, you know, like 20. It's like, oh, shit, man.
Just that's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's also, like, not to be no fun, but there's, like, the really, like, upsetting, not fun version of his story.
Like, well, there is some really unfun, like, there's really some upsetting. I mean, like, honest to God, it sounds like his dad and his upbringing was pretty fucking bad. Like he's clearly like not some guy who was doing this because he just was born demented. He went through some shit that brought him to where he got, you know? And it's pretty crazy just to think that, like, I don't know, it's kind of crazy when I think about the fact that he even existed. Like he's such an enigma. There's so much craziness around the guy. I don't even know what to think.
Yeah, it's even like, how did his entourage, like, not stop almost everything that happened? Like, they'd see their friend or brother bashing their teeth out with a microphone and just keep playing. Like, that. Like, I can't imagine seeing my friend start doing that and not stop the show and be like, hey, we need to address this as a group.
Right.
Like, team meeting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, like, some of the first couple bands he was in did kind of break up because of shit like that, right?
That's true.
And the fact, I think, that he kicked their asses on stage. Like, he literally got into, like, fist fights with his band members on stage, if I remember correctly. So
it would take only a little bit of shit to create a fight, I feel like.
It's
such a small amount of human shit.
Yeah. Speaking of shit, like, yeah, exactly. The second that he started crapping on stage, I'm fucking out. I'm just so out. Like I can deal with a lot of shit, but shit is not one of them.
Yeah.
It's just not.
I would agree with that. I think some people really, I think some of those people in the crowd knew they weren't going to enjoy it, and even when that started happening, they didn't enjoy it, but I think they just stood there because they thought they were, like, a part of something. Like, they were witnessing some sort of historical event. And I'm sure they weren't – I'm sure those cameras used to be big. Like, he didn't record on some little handy cam. So I bet that was an influence, too, for some of the people in those crowds. Like, they saw the lights and the audio stuff, and they were in it for that, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could only imagine – like, if someone told me that, like, a band's coming to town and the guy shits on stage and cuts himself and punches everybody, like, especially at, like, the age where I'm going to shows, I'm not missing that. And I'm gonna be like, does anybody have a camera? Like, because you would think that, I mean, especially, like, pre-internet, you got, like, I mean, where else are you gonna see that?
Yeah.
Definitely. And, you know, it's funny, I was thinking the part with the movie where Dee Dee Ramone's in for, like, 20 seconds,
I was just looking at my note about that.
I was laughing. I love that he finds out the name of the band he just joined while in a documentary about the band. He's like, "Oh, why did you join the Murder Junkies?" And he went, "Oh, that's the name of the band?" Like, I was like, yeah. This is so good. And like, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, as weird as like any of the Ramones were, including Dee Dee, like they were really like kind of upstanding unit. So to join the Murder Junkies is kind of insane to me.
Dude, not Dee Dee, well, man. Dee Dee was fresh off of Rehab.
You're right. He's kind of the most crazy one. Of them. Yeah, you're right.
Dee Dee's the wild man. He's the Gigi Allen of the Ramones.
Yeah. Like, have
That's
you guys
fair,
ever seen his
but most
documentary?
Of his biggest issues were the drugs. Yeah, yeah. No, I haven't.
Is Dee Dee home? The whole time, every time he popped up, I was like, ooh, I want to watch his Dee Dee Home. Like, that's another...
Oh, I haven't seen that. Yeah. No, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's a really great documentary, and it kind of shows, like, Dee Dee, man, like, he's another one of those guys. Like, his life, he just kept making... All those other guys were, like, doing, you know, relatively well, and he just kept making bad decisions. Like, and the whole point is, like, no, I'm the one who made heroin cool. Not Johnny Thunders. Yes. Fuck Johnny Thunders. Like, that's like kind of the point of it. Then they talk about his rap album where he keeps saying, he keeps describing himself about how he's just like Negroes. And it is so uncomfortable to watch.
Oh, man. Oh, I need to see that. And I also need to listen to the Dee Dee King hip hop album.
Yeah.
Those are things that need to happen. Jeez.
I think that little section of like Dee Dee Ramone, because it's literally like, I forgot he was even in it and the band. And
it's like 20 seconds, I swear to God. And then they're like, oh, he quit. He said it didn't have anything to do with this particular event, but.
And I feel like that, if anything, like that kind of proves that Todd Phillips, he's either great. I don't even know who edited this. I don't know if it's Todd. I need to look that up, actually. But if Todd edited this, or even just his direction of this doc, and I've edited this with him, put a lot of restraint. Because I bet you there's 20 minutes at least of them talking to Dee Dee, and instead they take like this tiny little section and cut it together so it is like this funny little segment. Like,
right.
I bet there's so much unused footage, and they could have made a 2-hour documentary on Gigi and milked it and made it boring, and instead it's this like 52-minute powerhouse that's hilarious, you know?
Yeah, I gotta wonder if any of that like excess footage exists, and if there was any way it could be like special features on some special edition, because that would be pretty fucking badass to see.
Well, there's gotta be stuff. I have the special edition of this movie, okay. And that's not how I watched it most recently. I will look at it after I'm done with this podcast, and I'll let you guys know. But
okay,
I knew about the dad shooting at them in the yard, and I think that's on that special edition, because when I watched it again, I was like, I didn't hear anybody talk about this. So right. I think there's a bunch of extra interviews with his mom and some other stuff like that.
By the way, how good are the Geraldo segments? I just gotta say,
like, oh my gosh,
it's so good. Like, it's and like growing up like with Geraldo around, like every time I see him, it's just like, oh man, I don't know. I just love those segments in this.
Yeah, can I put something on the record just in case he ever listens to this?
Yes.
Yeah. Fuck Geraldo.
That's totally fair.
That drives me insane. I can't stand listening to him or looking at his stupid face. I can't.
Well, he's got one of those natural kick me faces, and he just leans into it and just gets more and more kick me up. One thing I did want to mention and ask you guys about, have either of you watched the recent doc on Showtime?
No.
All in the Family.
No, for what?
No, they did a doc with Merle and their mother.
What?
Yeah.
How do I not know about this?
Yeah, I think it was 2017. I didn't know about it until we were, you know, preparing for the show, and I was like, there's a Gigi Allen, like, recent doc, and it's all about the mom. I watched some clips from it and stuff, and she kind of goes into a little bit more about their growing up and everything, and it looks great. I just didn't get a chance to check it out, but yeah, and geez, man, Merle's looking like a – He's looking like he's from that doc, the Wonderful Whites of West Virginia at this point, man. He's looking like a damn girl.
Oh, shit, I'm really excited because it's still available on the Showtime streaming app, and I have access to that.
I'm totally going to check that out.
I watched clips and it's talking about how, like, she's got to go there every day to, like, clean up the piss and shit that people go and do on his grave and stuff.
I am so glad that you brought this up. My first movie, which is, like, buried, like, you'll never find it intentionally. But the end of the movie, or like right towards the end of the movie, we all took a road trip to Gigi Allen's grave, and we almost got arrested because they thought we were doing things to it, and we weren't. And when we got there, there were empty liquor bottles all over it. It was like the middle of the day. It was like 3 p.m. when we got there. Right. But there were all these fireworks that had been blasted off and stuff, and the person who ran the graveyard or whatever, the groundskeeper, he came and freaked out on us and flagged down a cop. And we had to show the officer like our footage just to prove that we didn't do this stuff. And she was really nice and let us go. But yeah, we were there like 20 minutes and almost went to jail.
Oh my God, yeah, man. Yeah, they made it sound like it's like a serious problem. And you know, mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, Gigi Allen's got a mother who doesn't want anyone shitting on her son's grave. And, I mean,
yeah, yeah, it's got to be really hard to be related to Gigi. You know,
I would think so. Like, and I mean, honestly, Meryl doesn't seem like all that more stable. He just happens to not have killed himself.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and there's footage on the internet. Like, it's been a while since I've looked stuff like this up, but there's footage of Meryl smashing an acoustic guitar over some guy's head near Gigi's grave because he had pissed on it.
Oh, jeez.
There's a bunch of weird stuff that happened there. Yeah, I haven't looked at that stuff in a long time, but so I think it's so weird because like Merle probably knows that like Gigi would be into that, but it's his brother's grave and he's got to deal with like his mom doesn't want to visit and see like diarrhea on the side of the grave, you know?
Yeah.
Like, no, nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, no.
And it feels like a logical place for us to start to move into the final conversation because if we keep talking about diarrhea and stuff, I'm not sure how long I'm going to last.
Can I see the last thing I want to say is I rewatched.
Talk about shit.
I rewatched this film at the gym on my tablet.
Oh, the people on the bike next to you, man. Ooh.
Was it a judgment-free zone?
It was a judgment-free zone, and that's literally what I thought when he was sticking the banana up his ass. I was like, dude, it's Planet Fitness. Like, we all pay like $9 a month to come here, and everywhere is like judgment-free. I was like, judgment-free. This is what I'm into. People I see every day. But that's how I rewatched this film, and
yeah, I mean, still, I know when I go to the Y, I'm not expecting like the 70-year-old guy on the bicycle next to me to be watching people shove bananas up their ass. But who knows? I mean, it might happen. So before we kind of leave our lovely listeners with some parting recommendations, I wanted to give you a chance, Jason, to talk a little bit more without, you know, I don't really want to get heavy into your movie because it hasn't come out and we don't want to spoil anything for anyone. But, you know, what was so what was kind of the experience been so far with showing your movie, you know, around the country? You've done a few festivals. You're going to be doing some more. How's that all going?
It's been going really well. Like the reception has been great. We've met so many people that this movie, you know, sometimes just from the poster or just from the trailer, they don't think that they're actually going to like it. And it's funny. Sometimes people will come up and that's the first thing they'll tell me is like, you got to change your trailer. Cause I didn't want to watch it. And my friend did. And I wound up loving your movie. And so that's kind of cool. Like I always think about Tarantino says that like, it's something like if 1,000 people watch his movie, he hopes they see 1,000 different movies or something like that. And that's kind of what we keep experiencing is like one person will have a totally different understanding of what the movie's about than another person. But overall, it's been a really awesome response. I've even had like some staunch straight edgers that were like, man, I was really conflicted because I didn't think I was going to like this, and I don't like that the straight edgers are the bad guys, but I still like it. So it's been cool to show it off and like meet with people. But it's also tough. Like I'm donating blood plasma twice a week to actually take us on this film festival circuit.
Jeez.
So yeah, it's tough. So it takes a lot, but I really appreciate getting to like meet with people and talk with them, like really commune with, you know, film fans and people that are now becoming fans of our movie.
Yeah, and you mentioned going on tour with it. Is that something that's going to be happening soon, or?
Yeah, that kicks off October 3rd in Toronto. But we're still adding dates, but the majority of it's up there. We teamed up in California with this group, Numbskull Shows, who've been really supportive, and they set up 5 dates. So like middle of the month on the 17th, we play. That's actually Edge Day. And we play in Los Angeles, and then I fly back to screen it locally in Lafayette, Indiana. But we're screening it all over the place. We're about to set one up in Dallas. We've got one in Missouri. We've got one in Virginia at an Alamo Draft House. So we're doing all this stuff. And like, I'm sorry for people that haven't gotten to see it yet, that they keep hearing about it at festivals and they can't see it. But so we're trying to do this tour to try to make back some money. We do have some distribution stuff that's coming down the pipeline. I don't want to announce it yet because the I's aren't dotted and the T's aren't crossed, but it should be out by the first of the year, so everybody can really watch it.
Awesome, awesome. I'm glad to hear that, and we'll have to kind of revisit it a little bit then when people get to see it, because I'd love to talk more about it, but I don't want to spoil anything for anyone, you know. So it's definitely you know, some of the stuff you hit on there was exactly how I felt. I went into it a little nervous about, you know, how are straight edgers going to be portrayed and all this stuff. And I end up coming out just having a good time. So sure, I think, you know, even as a non-straight edge myself, I was a straight edge once. So, you know, I was a little trepidatious. And, you know, I think that is something that, you know, some people will probably struggle with. But once you see it, I think you'll see that it's not about, you know, vilifying straight edgers particularly. It's about vilifying these villain assholes who are in the movie.
Yeah. What we did try to do, like, I really wanted James, he's the leader of the straight edgers, like, I wanted it to seem, and this might be the one thing that if I could go back and show a little bit more of a transition, I would have done that, because I wanted it to seem like it was just, it's that the other straight edgers are just being kind of bullied by their leader. And really it's it's just this one guy making a bad decision and taking a turn for the worse. So we probably could have done a little bit better job with that transition, but I don't know. Most people don't seem bothered by it.
No,
change a million things.
Yeah. And I mean, and one thing I love, I mean, I love that for someone who's knows very little about straight edge, you know, culture as a whole, the movie, I was kind of worried because I always have this kind of trepidation, especially like movies based around subculture of any kind, but you avoid ever letting it kind of fall into that corny the little gap that's a lot of people that you can tell that you come from a background of being around these people. Everybody seems like somebody you knew. And no, I think you do a really great job of balancing that. And yeah, man, that 76 minutes, it was 76 minutes or 79 minutes?
79 minutes. 79. But
I talk every fucking week about how I'm like, 80 minutes is the, that should be the max. It is like, because I just think it's like such that sweet spot where you want more, you get a quick punch through the story, and you want more when you get to it. So I don't want to say anything because I know hopefully these dates keep getting added, and whatever market you're in, you know, shit, drive an hour and a half, go see a fucking movie.
Definitely, man. Yeah.
Don't wait till it's in your house, go see a movie, support the people actually making
sold
it.
And every DVD and Blu-ray bought, that's going to keep the blood plasma needle out of my arm a little while longer. So
yeah, Jason, I'm very worried about you.
Yeah, we're a little nervous. You might not, you know, you might overdo it. You might slip into Gigi Allen territory of giving too much blood, man.
Too much blood and one head injury, and we're going to be.
Yeah, shit. Yeah, like, dude, let's not fall over and knock your head. We'll be doing the new Jason Zink documentary. So,
ooh, but we could clickbait the hell out of it. I don't know, man. Roll the dice.
Oh, man. So, like I said, we always wrap our episodes up with some recommendations. And then I want you to, you know, before we go, I do want you to plug your website and stuff so people can check that out. But do you have a recommendation of a punk rock film, or any film for that matter, that you think folks should check out as we walk out? Besides, of course, they should all see Straight Edge Kegger.
Yeah. So, man, this is tough because there's a lot of punk rock movies that I like, and even punk rock horror movies. But I'm going to pick a weird one that nobody ever talks about, which is – it's called Times Square. And Times Square has Tim Curry in it. And he is he's a radio DJ, and there are these two girls from opposite sides of the tracks. One of them is this punk rock poet chick, and they become best friends and just cause havoc in the streets, throwing TVs off like balconies at hotels and stuff. And they're kind of on the run from their regular lives. And Tim Curry keeps kind of cheering them on the radio.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's such a good movie.
Am I remembering correctly? Is that the one where, like, the girl, she's, like, escaping from, like, a mental institution or something like that? Okay, yeah. I saw that a long time ago.
There's so much more. Yeah, there's a lot to it. But, man, that movie is incredible, and it has such a good soundtrack, and, like, nobody's ever heard of it. So that's people need to check that out.
The Slee Sisters, right?
Yeah, the Slee Sisters.
Okay, yeah. No, I've got to remember. I remember Tim Curry. You know, that's awesome.
I am so happy that you remember that.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
Yeah, and for everybody out there, it's not a horror movie, like, at all. It's like a drama coming-of-age story, but it's awesome.
That's awesome. All right, let's get to yours, Justin. What's the last film that you watched?
No, it's not the last film I watched. Although it's funny that we talked about Bikini Kill, because I picked a documentary about Kathleen Hanna called The Punk Singer. It came out back in 2013. I love Kathleen Hanna so much.
Yeah,
and so for me, like, just getting to a little more intimate, you know, bit about, you know, her life and kind of her growing up in the scene, it was really a fun way to get to know her a little better, you know. And I've always really appreciated her music, and I still do. So yeah, the Punk Singer. How about you, Blaine?
Yeah, man, which I don't know why I haven't seen The Punk Singer. That's a movie I've been meaning to get around to. I went a different direction a little bit on it. I have a weird love-hate with this movie, but I always go back to it. It is so magnificently weird and kind of bad, but kind of great, which is kind of the mockumentary Great Rock and Roll Swindle by Julian Temple about the Sex Pistols. Yeah. It is a bizarre thing. It's like watching a band break up before your eyes.
It really is.
Yeah, it's overly long. It's packed full of so much just... It's like a... Like, they got like a... It's kind of like a bargain basement Terry Gilliam thing going throughout the whole thing. Johnny Rotten had nothing to do with the fucking film. That's why the only thing you hear from him is pretty much just who killed Bambi. And I don't know. For me, it's like one of those like happy accidents where I think he had so much material he edited into something kind of like a, you know, it's about an hour and 40, hour and 45 minute music video. And it's not great, but it's interesting. It's incredibly odd. I think the stuff that you get to see with Sid Vicious is amazing when he does his version of My Way in the film, which is probably the real reason to watch it. But besides it's really strange. Like, Steve Jones and both Paul Cook are not actors, and you can tell. But it's so odd. And like, if you were to sit down, like I always tell people, if you're gonna watch Great Rock and Roll Swindle, watch that and then directly watch The Filth and the Fury, because Filth and the Fury kind of fills in all those gaps of why this film is such a fucking mess. So, I think it's one of those movies that kind of gets lost, but Shout Factory put out a great version of it probably about 10 years ago, so you can still find copies of that floating around. But yeah, that's just a movie I think is really cool.
Yeah, that's the version that I have. It's been a long time since I've watched it, but I don't know about you, but when I first watched it, I just every 10 minutes kind of had to keep going. I can't believe A, it's still going, and B, ooh, that this exists.
Yeah, like it really is a movie where it's like, who said that this should be put out? Like,
yeah.
And
yeah,
like the whole Malcolm McLaren just leaning into being like the villain of punk rock, and he's like attached yeah, to like a gas mask and all this like
he
weird
didn't give shit. He didn't give a shit, man. He was no, like, if there's money that he had, I'll be the evil guy. I don't care.
Yeah, because awesome, at the end of the day, he still got paid. Like,
yeah,
yeah. And yeah, because and I think it's like it was distributed through Virgin, so like it was. I remember it was always in the free section of my Blockbuster, like with weird like videos, like, you know, learning to cope with gay parents, sort of things, like with all those. In oh my those God, mix, there was a great rock and roll swindle. So whenever we picked up anything, like with our friends, we'd be like, oh shit, is it in? And we'd grab it for free. And so, yeah, but no, it is so weird. It is a bizarre film, but yeah.
Interesting. So as we're officially wrapping up here, I want to give you one more chance to tell folks where they can find you on the internet and all that kind of jazz.
Yeah, so we try to be as much of a one-stop shop as we can be. So everything's pretty much Weird on Top Pictures. So it's weirdontoppictures.com. On Instagram, it's Weird on Top Pictures. On Facebook, we have Weird on Top Pictures, but we also have a Straight Edge Kegger page that I would appreciate if everybody would go like. And then people can also find me on Facebook on my personal page, just Jason Zink, and chat with me about punk rock or horror movies. I'm down. I'm an open book.
No, that's so awesome. Jason. No, thank you so much for coming on the show. And there's a lot of fun because I think all three of us kind of come from, you know, hanging around the punk rock scene and everything. So it's fun to kind of stroll down memory lane and get real distracted by everything. But yeah, everybody go make sure you check out Weird on Top. Go like the page for Straight Edge Kegger. And I just want to tell everyone, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back all month of October, so you'll be getting weekly episodes out of that. And we will see you folks all next time. Love you all. Peace. Thinking with him that makes you a little bit sympathetic. Imagine if like some asshole that you played in a band with that like punched you and like shit on the floor, had no talent, and you had to quit, and some asshole from like Hollywood shows up and is like, we're making a documentary about the singer for your, you'd be like, what the fuck? Like, no one knows who I am.